No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. Here, as we are getting ready, the Cardinals will be facing the San Diego Chargers in their preseason game two. As they enter the preseason, heading out, they ended last week with a 34-19 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. And we're going to talk about the San Diego Chargers. We talked on Tuesday with Seth Cox as we talked about the loss and some of more of the Cardinals football, who played well, who didn't. But I've got John Gennaro on the line from BoltsFromTheBlue.com, our SB Nation San Diego Chargers blog. John, I'm glad to have you on. If I recall, about a year ago we did this for the season opener. I think we've talked for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, Jess, I am glad to be back. Let's make it a solid 3 hours this time.
I don't know how many listeners we'll have by then. Like, they'll probably turn it off after the first 20 minutes.
Look, we can keep it entertaining. I'm just happy we're not in the same situation as last year, where we had the back-to-back preseason and then week one regular season games, where that preseason game was especially useless. That was terrible.
And this time, there's nothing on the line other than people's jobs. So I really enjoy the preseason previews because none of those fan feelings come in where you want to sort of resent the other guy. Even though, John, I love you to death, but when it comes to your, I'd rather see your team be pounded to the ground when the Cardinals play. And this week, I really don't care.
Right, exactly. No, I'll totally root for both teams. I actually, because the Chargers were somewhat in the running for Bruce Arians, and I rooted so hard against him because I thought he was going to be a terrible head coach, and he's turned out to be fantastic. There's actually a little part of me that loves rooting against the Cardinals and rooting for Bruce Arians to fail so I can look smart, although I think we're past that point. This week I think we're both just rooting for, the end of the day, no injuries, and hopefully some good performances from the guys down the depth chart.
So let's start with what is one of the most recent sets of news, and that's Philip Rivers' new contract. What's sort of the reaction out there in California land to his new deal?
Surprisingly positive. And I don't mean like I expected a negative reaction, but there wasn't really this outcry of make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks, give him as many years as he wants. When the Chargers came out a day or two before the contract was signed and said, look, if we have to, we'll just franchise him for the next 2 years. That's fine with us. The fans were like, okay, sure, whatever. Like, if that's what you want to do, that's cool. And then as soon as it got announced that he signed a 4-year contract extension, he's going to be with the Chargers for the next 5 years. By that point, he'll be 37, 38 years old. Very, very good chance that he retires as a Charger, never having played for another team. The fans went completely nuts in a positive way. They realized that this is sort of what we didn't have with the Junior Seau and what we didn't have with the Rodney Harrison. And we have a guy that is only ours. He's never going to play for another team. And it was just this swelling of pride throughout the week that, you know, we may lose our team, but we're not going to lose our quarterback. So everyone's very, very happy. I don't think anyone is worried about it. I don't think anyone's, you know, even looking at it pessimistically yet. Right now, it's all good.
I have to say that based on at least the market he's in, that's a really good fan base for Philip Rivers, because if you look on a national level, especially here in Phoenix Talk Radio, there was a lot of criticism. Well, why would they do that? Philip Rivers, you can't win a Super Bowl with Philip Rivers. And while that hasn't been the case, they call him a choker in big games. I'm over here in Phoenix, and I see the Cardinals trying to do the same thing with Carson Palmer in the twilight of his career. If you look side by side, you'd have to say that Phillip Rivers is definitely the more accomplished quarterback. Carson Palmer and Phillip Rivers probably equal in talent, but if you look at the career, Phillip Rivers has been much better. And yet we have Super Bowl expectations here with Carson Palmer. I don't see why the Chargers can't, like, why Phillip Rivers can't be the quarterback of a Super Bowl winning team.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I did a little bit of analysis on his contract today, and if you look at the average he's getting paid year by year, there's only three players more on average on a yearly basis, and that's Ben Roethlisberger, who's got two Super Bowls, Russell Wilson, who should have two Super Bowls, and Aaron Rodgers, who I think you could argue should have two Super Bowls as well. So he's definitely getting paid like a guy who's got multiple Super Bowls without ever putting it on his resume. However, you could argue that they overpaid Phillip Rivers, and if they did, which I actually think they did a little bit, but I also think they needed to, because Eric Weddle's in the last year of his deal. It doesn't look like he's going to re-sign with the Chargers. They have both walked away from the negotiating table, very unhappy with one another. So it looks like they're going to lose their star defensive player. Antonio Gates in the last year of his contract, and, you know, all signs point to if he doesn't retire, the Chargers are probably going to offer him like a veteran minimum or something very low that he probably won't take. Malcolm Floyd, who's been the team's number one or number two wide receiver for years now, came in the same draft class as Phillip Rivers, has announced that he's retiring at the end of the year. So they're losing a lot of their stars, offensively and defensively. They had to make sure they retained somebody from the core. And so Phillip Rivers knew that he was in an advantageous position. They took a while with negotiations. I think he got everything he wanted to get, because I think he realized how desperate this team was to retain at least somebody that the fans could recognize.
And how much of a backtrack did he really have to do? I mean, I heard the audio or some of the quotes he had to say when he sort of clarified his remarks about the team moving to Los Angeles. How quickly did he have to backtrack with that new contract?
He didn't backtrack a lot. I mean, luckily for him, he's really smart. And when he spoke about Los Angeles in the past, what he said was, yeah, when it comes to the contract negotiations, I do think about Los Angeles. Los Angeles does play a part. I have to think about, you know, how much I would be willing to deal with as far as moving my family and blah, blah, blah. He was basically saying, yes, it factors into contract negotiations, the fact that we don't know where the team is going to be. He never said, I don't like Los Angeles. I wouldn't move to Los Angeles. I hate Los Angeles. He just said, yeah, it factors in, and, you know, my family... You know, he's got seven kids. I think he's working on the eighth is due soon.
Yeah.
They've all grown up in San Diego. And so I think if he's going to move them anywhere, he kind of just wants to move that one time and then just stay there wherever they go for the rest of their lives.
And maybe so Los Angeles isn't that place that they want to live.
Right. And he said publicly, and he said he told his wife and his kids this, that if they leave San Diego, where they're going to move is quote-unquote home, which is, you know, Alabama. So he's basically told his kids, if we leave San Diego, we're going to Alabama. And so during his press conference, he said, you know, my kids asked me after I said I was signing this contract, they said, where are we going to live? Are we going to live in San Diego? Are we going to live in Los Angeles? And he sort of said, look, I explained to them, I don't know, but, you know, this was a good enough deal, and I want to be a Charger. We're going to put our money on it and hope that they stay in San Diego.
Yep, and, well, worst case scenario, it's not like Los Angeles is forever away, so he could viably live
right.
in
there,
San
there
Diego.
Are, there are players in the past who have done that commute before. Phillip Rivers himself admitted he has gone to Los Angeles. He has spent time there before. I actually bumped into him in Los Angeles a few years ago, so I know that it's not the hardest commute in the world. He could technically leave his family in San Diego if he wanted to.
So, about how Phillip Rivers' play has gone, there was a bit of a decline. There was a spike again with that year in 2013. Is there worry that is it just a decline in play himself? Is it the lack of talent? Is it because he was surrounded by a ton of talent early in his career, and then it's all sort of starting to get stripped away. What are sort of the expectations for him entering the 2015 season?
Well, not only was he surrounded by a ton of talent early in his career, he had three Pro Bowlers on the offensive line in front of him, and a Pro Bowl tight end, a Pro Bowl running back, a Pro Bowl wide receiver in Vincent Jackson. So, yeah, there was a ton of talent around him to take the heat off him. And over the years, Vincent Jackson left. Antonio Gates isn't really Pro Bowl level anymore. LaDainian Tomlinson was never replaced by a Pro Bowl level talent. And the offensive line has completely gone to crap. So the issue when Norv Turner was here was that he was still operating an offense that required an offensive line to play well, and they didn't have the guys to do that. Ken Whisenhunt came in as the offensive coordinator for 1 year and built an offense that didn't require the offensive line to be that great. They just had to be okay. It was a very quick pass, quick decision offense, and Phillip Rivers played well in that offense. Now, when Whisenhunt left, there was a bit of a transition to first-year offensive coordinator Frank Reich, and the running game without Danny Woodhead went down even more. Ryan Matthews, I think, was more injured last year than he was in 2013. That hurt a bit. And so it was very, very pass-heavy behind a really terrible offensive line. So this year, it's a similar offense to what they were running last year, but we now have Danny Woodhead back in the backfield. Melvin Gordon, the first-round draft pick out of Wisconsin, is supposed to help the running game. But more than anything else, they have completely rehauled the offensive line. Orlando Franklin was their biggest free agent signing. He's the starting left guard. Chris Watt, who was sort of the third or fourth center, starting center for the team last year, has solidified himself as the best center on the roster. Looks pretty good. On the right side of the line, they signed Joe Barksdale from the Rams to be the new starting right tackle. He looks great. And DJ Fluker, who is a bit of an issue at right tackle because he's not very quick or fast, but he's very strong and smart, bumps into the right guard position. Now that offensive line is actually powerful, strong. It can be a strength of the team. And so they're going to use that run game. They're going to use that offensive line to take some of the pressure off of Rivers. But you also have to factor, he played about half of the year last year with like a cracked vertebrae, I think is what they finally came out at the end of the year and said he had. So he was dealing with some major, major injury issues, and they're hoping that those are gone now.
So, yeah, you kind of talked about some of the acquisitions. Let's backtrack to the offseason, the beginning of free agency. Some of the guys that you, the Chargers, that is, they re-signed King Dunlap.
Yep.
They brought in Jacoby Jones, who, at least in the return game, can be super, super fun to watch.
Yep.
They re-signed Brandon Flowers. You mentioned Orlando Franklin. They brought in Stevie Johnson. Who knows what kind of production you're going to get out of him? But who other than that, who are the impact guys who came, and who are the important players that left?
I mean, Orlando Franklin's probably the biggest, the new guy that got added to the roster. He's going to make the biggest impact. I think Brandon Flowers might be the biggest impact free agent overall. They've been desperate for a number one cornerback for years, and he filled that role very well last year. Now it actually looks like he'll still play the number one cornerback role, but he might be the second best cornerback on the team. Jason Verrett, who was the team's number one draft pick last year, who played in only six games, looks amazing. In camp, during the Cowboys game last week, he looks like he's a Darrell Revis-style corner, and it's amazing, everyone in town. As far as guys that left that made an impact, Stevie Johnson pretty much fills the role left by Eddie Royal. Melvin Gordon pretty much fills the role left by Ryan Matthews without much of a drop-off, I don't think. So, Dwight Freeney and Jared Johnson might be the two biggest losses. And Jared Johnson retired, and Dwight Freeney is, while he's still technically looking for a job, it doesn't look like he's going to get one. He's going to retire as well.
Okay, and we move to the draft. Looking at the top of your draft, in fact, you guys having picked a few selections before the Cardinals ended up grabbing a couple of players. Actually, your first two rounds looked a lot like some people would have liked the Cardinals to go, as you got Melvin Gordon in the first round, a guy that was connected to the Cardinals if he had fallen that far, especially since Everyone's talking about running back, running back, running back, running back. We were in the running for Adrian Peterson, this and that. You got Melvin Gordon, and then you grabbed an inside linebacker, Denzel Perryman, in the second round. Another guy, another position that the Cardinals kind of wanted to get. You also got Kyle Emanuel late, which is a guy that was on a lot of people's radars here in town, at least among the draft community. Tell us about the guys that the team added in the draft and how they are contributing thus far.
Well, let me knock these first two guys out of the way really quickly so I can spend more time telling you about how great Kyle Emanuel is. So Melvin Gordon was a pick that I hated and a trade that I hated even more. I'm very much against first-round running backs.
Understandably.
It doesn't look like he's going to – well, it's they're unsure about whether or not he's going to play against the Cardinals. He played very poorly against the Cowboys and now has a bum ankle that kept him out of practice for the first time today. So he's, you know, not looking like the type of guy that you trade up for and spend a first-round pick for. But one of the reasons they did that was they apparently fell in love with him, and the Cardinals were one of a couple teams that they were worried was going to pick him. So, you know, they did what they had to do to move up, and they got him, and we'll see. Denzel Perryman plays a position that the Chargers are surprisingly very deep at. You know, inside linebacker, they have Manti Te'o, they have Donald Butler, they signed Kevell Connor from the Colts a couple of years ago, and he's been excellent. They really didn't need help at inside linebacker, and Denzel Perryman has had a hard time in training camp making any sort of impact. He can't seem to get on the field, not due to health reasons, but he's just sort of a third stringer at this point almost, and he's not doing a lot to impress. So those two guys we're still very much in wait-and-see mode, which we are with most rookies. Kyle Emanuel is a different story. And I'm going to use some exaggerated language here, but I assure you that it's 100% true. He might be the best pick the Chargers have made in 30 years.
Wow.
He's a fifth-round guy out of North Dakota State. After a couple weeks of training camp and one game against the Cowboys in which he played two quarters, had a sack, a forced fumble, I believe another tackle for loss on top of that, and was basically a demon every time he was on the field. When you watch this kid at camp, he's got more moves than anyone I've ever watched at practice not named Dwight Freeney. And he's strong, he's got the size, he seems to have the speed. So, and the Chargers have started saying, finally, now they're finally ready to start talking about him, putting the spotlight on him a little bit. The rhetoric coming out of the Chargers is he looks like a first-round pick.
Ooh.
He looks that good. And perhaps fortunately or unfortunately, the guy that was ahead of him on the depth chart, the third outside linebacker, Torque Williams, broke his foot in the game against the Cowboys. Ooh. So Emanuel has already bumped up to the third spot on the outside linebacker depth chart. And there's already talks. I mean, they haven't even played their second preseason game. There's already talks that they're thinking about moving him in as the starting outside linebacker and taking Jerry Itachu, who I think was their second or third round pick last year, who looked pretty good, and turning Itachu into a third down pass rush specialist and keeping Emanuel on the field as much as possible. He has been incredible, and I just hope he stays healthy and keeps it up.
That's really surprising. And normally after the middle of the first round, you get the rare exception like Justin Houston, but pass rushers that after that are either highly specialized or just not that special. Is he a guy who can play three downs and be effective even in the run game?
It certainly looks like it. What they've been doing is what I've seen at practice. I've been at four or five or six practices so far this year. What I've seen at practice is once they realized what an amazing pass rusher he was, they wanted to see what else he could handle. His first couple days in pass coverage, he was very shaky, but he picked it up quick enough that they seemed comfortable with him doing that role. But the big thing for them, the last couple years, Jarrett Johnson has been the guy to seal off the edge going against a run to keep that run from breaking outside and force the play back inside. Without Jarrett Johnson, they're kind of missing that. They feel like it's going to hurt their run defense quite a bit. They've been trying to put Melvin Ingram in that role, but Ingram hasn't been very good at it. Jerry Itachu just flat out can't do it. So what they've been doing since the Cowboys game is letting Emmanuel fill that role, try and shut off the run so that it doesn't hit the edge, force it back inside, and he's been doing that well as well. And I think that's really what's pushing them to say, this can be our three-down linebacker because he can do the things we absolutely need done, and he can do them better than any other outside linebacker on the roster right now.
Going back a little bit to Melvin Gordon, I heard, now obviously I didn't see, I turned on the Chargers game last week, but it was already when Gordon was done for the night, and it was Oliver in the game, and they were kind of talking him up. But the kind of the word is that Melvin Gordon, that Gordon isn't running the same way was it when he was in college, which is a bit downhill runner, very decisive. Could that simply be because of he needs the reps in the office, or he's not used to what's going on, and that's why he's hesitant to hit those holes?
It's probably more likely than anything that that's it. It's a very different run-blocking system than what he's used to. Wisconsin runs the power blocking and big focus on creating lanes on one side or the other. The Chargers run a zone blocking scheme. There's a lot more counters. There's a lot more, you know, follow a pulling guard. And so it's quite a bit different. He definitely needs to get used to it. He needs to get used to the speed of the NFL. Right now, his biggest issue is he's just too hesitant. I wanted to say impatient, but that's backwards. He's too hesitant. He, you know, will sort of dance behind the offensive line, waiting to see where the hole's going to open up. And then when it opens up, by the time he gets there, it's closed already.
And that's what happens in the pros.
Right. He needs to know where that hole's going to be and run there and be there when it opens. He hasn't shown that ability yet. He hasn't really shown it in practice. He definitely didn't show it against the Cowboys. Doesn't sound like he's going to show it against the Cardinals because he's probably not going to play. These are things that a lot of rookie running backs go through that could certainly get better, but we've seen our fair share of running backs come out of Wisconsin with ridiculously good stats. Ron Dane comes to mind that got to the pros and just never figured it out because that Wisconsin running game is so, so, so good and so tailored to one specific style of running back that we've yet to see, as far as I know, maybe you can correct me, Monty Ball was not anything to write home about last year for the Broncos, so I think we've really yet to see a guy come out of Wisconsin with great stats that does anything in the pros. So there's a little worry there, but the things that he's showing that are poor are not poor work ethic or poor attitude. It's just basic rookie things that we're hoping he can grow out of.
But it's one of those things when you trade up for a guy in the first round, you hope that he has more of an impact early on. That makes sense. Let's talk about some of the... Every year, kind of after the draft, is the craze of the undrafted guys. Are there any of those guys that are standing out in the offseason training camp so far?
Standing out, there's a few linebackers. There's a guy who name is not ringing a bell right now, who sort of came up and filled Kyle Emmanuel's spot when Torrick Williams went down with a broken foot. No one who's challenging for a starting spot, except, you know, if you want to count Jaleel Adai, who was a undrafted free agent a few years ago and has had a start here or there for the Chargers and is now battling with Jimmy Wilson for the strong safety spot. I don't know if there's any undrafted free agents that are a sure thing to make this team right now, which is a little different from how it was in the last few years with the Chargers.
Now, heading into this game, what's sort of the game plan? The Cardinals plan to have their starters. Now, last week, they had the starters exactly in one series. And then, yeah, they scored the touchdown. They got the interception. They were done. And then they had the starters, the second stringers, into the rest of the first quarter. The Cardinals plan to play their starters through one quarter of play. Is that sort of the game plan for San Diego as well, or do they have something different in mind?
Yeah, they did about the same thing last week. They played one series, and Danny Woodhead scored a touchdown, and then everyone went and sat down. Melvin Gordon stayed, I think, for another series or two to run behind the second-string offensive line, which was also part of the problem. He looked so bad behind a hesitant line. Was about half of his carries were behind the second-stringers. I would say that's a pretty good bet on what you could expect from the Chargers. About a one full quarter from their starters. if Melvin Gordon plays, I'd like to say you'd see a little bit more of him, but maybe not with the bum ankle. I'm going to be really interested to see which tight end plays with the first stringers, because Antonio Gates is still allowed to play in the preseason, played with the first team last week, but he's suspended for the first four games of the year, and he's not going to be there. And Ladarius Green, who has been, you know, very inconsistent, but is obviously very talented as his backup, they're relying on him to be a big part of the offense those first 4 weeks. I don't think he's had a target. He hasn't really done a lot in practice. It seems like he's still kind of buried behind Gates on the depth chart. I would like them to, you know, sort of give Gates the game off and see if they can work Green in with that, you know, first-string offense, get him used to it.
Is that going to be – how much of an issue will that be for the first part of the season, not having Gates out there?
It's – luckily, Mike McCoy has a long track record of, you know, taking whatever issues he has with his roster and still getting offense out of it. I mean, this is the guy that won a playoff game as an offensive coordinator for Tim Tebow. So it's you like to think that even if it's an issue, they're going to find a way to generate some offense. They got enough running backs. Danny Woodhead's a dual threat. Stevie Johnson is arguably a number one or number two level wide receiver who's essentially playing the slot. So they can do a lot of things and just take the tight end off the field and maybe throw a little bit more than pass and, you know, flip the script so you're not basing the pass off the run, you're basing the run off the pass and, you know, draw plays Danny Woodhead and all that. But in an ideal world, they would like Ladarius Green to just step right in, run all of Gates' routes, do everything that Antonio Gates does until he comes back. And I had high hopes that was going to happen. So far through the first few weeks of training camp and the game against the Cowboys, I'm not seeing it.
Okay. Let's go bigger picture now. Entering year three of Mike McCoy's stay there, his regime, his tenure. What are the expectations entering this year, and where does the public stand on how McCoy has done as coach?
Well, you got to look at, to know what the expectations are, you got to know why someone was hired and why the guy in front of him was fired. Norv Turner was hired because Marty Schottenheimer couldn't win playoff games. And his first year in San Diego, he came in, they won playoff games. And so people were very happy. The guy we hired for the job did the job. Once he started losing playoff games and eventually not even making the playoffs at all, he was gone, despite the fact that Norv Turner never had a losing season as the Chargers coach, as far as I know. So his worst season was 8-8. So, and that's a record that has kept Rex Ryan employed for quite some time. So Mike McCoy was hired after Norv to say, this is a playoff caliber team. Not only do you have to get to the playoffs, you got to win a playoff game. So his first year, they got to the playoffs, they won a playoff game. Awesome, you've done your job. Second year, they missed the playoffs. So this year, I'd say you got to find that happy medium. If he doesn't make the playoffs, if this Chargers team does not make the playoffs this year, Mike McCoy is going to be feeling the heat underneath the seat.
What are the realistic expectations for the team this year? I talking to Matt Connor over at Arrowhead Pride last week. There is a buzz around Kansas City that they have improved enough that they can overtake the Broncos a little bit, because that they feel they've improved that much, and the belief that perhaps maybe there's going to be a drop back with Peyton Manning and the Broncos.
And I don't know why I believe that. I've gotten in trouble doubting Peyton Manning in the past, but I believe that as well. If you ask me to rank the AFC West right now, the Broncos are probably my third team and the Raiders are probably my fourth. As far as whether or not the Chargers are better than the Chiefs, I don't know. I'd like to say they are, because I like their quarterback a lot better. I like their offense as a whole a lot better. But I like the Kansas City defense a lot better.
So you are on the record for liking Alex Smith more than Phillip Rivers?
No. I said I like our quarterback
better than their quarterback. Okay. I heard that wrong. No, I was like, wait a minute.
No. I like the Chargers offense as a whole better than the Chiefs.
And I like
a quarterback that can complete a 15-yard pass. So
yes,
of course I'm going to pick Phillip Rivers over Alex Smith. But their defense is significantly better than ours. And You know, I'd argue that Jamal Charles, even at this stage in his career, is a pretty big improvement over Melvin Gordon. So you go back and forth. Heading into training camp, this coaching staff frustrated me because a lot of times I thought they lost games by being too stubborn, and they were risking that again. When they took DJ Fluker, who is the first pick of Tom Telesco and Mike McCoy as the brain trust of the San Diego Chargers, who they had stubbornly kept at right tackle despite the fact that he was obviously ill-suited for it. When they moved him to right guard and signed a right tackle and put him there and signed Orlando Franklin and put him at left guard, I thought they added 3 to 4 wins to their total this year. That running game, even beyond Melvin Gordon, Brandon Oliver was a solid running back last year. Danny Woodhead is one of the most valuable, versatile running backs in the league. If they stay healthy, this Charger team can win 12, 13 games and win the division. However, they're one or two big injuries away, and even outside of Rivers, they're one or two big injuries away from being an 8-8 team.
And that's completely understandable. 8-8. 8-8 is what the Chargers tend to know, isn't it? 8-8, 9-7.
Look, they usually hover around there, and it takes something big for them to win, you know, 11, 12, 13 games. But I actually looked back at the last time that I had this much confidence in a Chargers offensive line. I think the year was 2009,
ooh,
which was when they still had Chris Dielman. They still had Marcus McNeil. They still had Nick Hardwick. The right side of the line was pretty good. It was LaDainian Tomlinson's last year in San Diego when he wasn't great, but he was good enough. And Gates was in his prime, and Rivers was in his prime. And that team started 2-3 and then proceeded to win their next 11 games and finished 13-3.
Wow.
And that is the type of team that I think they could have with this sort of offensive line.
Interesting. So I'm really getting to be intrigued about how the divisions go. The Cardinals look to be improved. The Seahawks are, you know, they're two-time NFC champs now. The 49ers are down, and the Rams might be up, but they're coached by Jeff Fisher, so you can bet on somewhere between 7-9 and 9-7. Maybe.
Exactly.
But we look at the AFC West with the improvements they're making. That's going to be especially if the Broncos can still, if Peyton Manning's going to come back, which I have a hard time counting him out, especially the way he played the first half of last season. So that's going to be one dogfight of a division, it sounds like.
The really interesting thing is that it's really, really going to come down to road games against divisional opponents. Because last year the Chargers did a really bad job. I think they lost in Denver, lost in Kansas City, and almost lost in Oakland. And actually they may have even lost in Oakland if I remember correctly. The year before, I think they went 5-1 against the division and, you know, made it to the playoffs and beat Andy Dalton in the playoffs. And
everyone does that, though. Everyone
does Andy Dalton. I know they do. It's a bit of a cheap win for McCoy, but I give it to him. But the Broncos don't lose at home. They just don't. The Chiefs don't lose at home. They don't. And, you know, the Raiders are kind of improved this year. I don't know what their home crowd's going to be like with the whole Los Angeles thing hanging over them, but they're not an easy win necessarily anymore. I think that's a 6-7 win team this year. So the Chargers are going to have to win their home games and then steal one of those. You know, if you get one against the Raiders, great, but you're probably going to have to steal one in Kansas City or one in Denver. The year before, I believe they won in both places.
That's not an easy thing. That's much, very much kind of like the division out here. And you can say that is probably the key every single year in almost all the divisions is the division play with how...
By the way, did you say that the 49ers are improved this year? Cause
no.
I'll hang up right now.
No. I don't expect... I mean, some people think they're going to be a dumpster fire. They still have some talent on that roster, so I don't think they'll be completely a dumpster fire. But, oh, heavens no, they have... I think Kaepernick will bounce back and play better than last year, which will keep them hovering into the, rather than the falling apart into the 5-win territory, that they will win 7-8 games, I think. Maybe I'm crazy.
But...
Well, and you may call me crazy for this one, because I know for a fact that I've already been proven wrong on this, I believe. But I find it really hard to think that Anquan Boldin will deal with anything less than 7 wins in a season, maybe 6.
Oh,
that man. Even last year, I saw Boldin will them to 3 or 4 wins that they just had no business having a part of.
Yeah, he is so intense. I don't know how he stuck around, honestly. I don't know how he managed, because when Jim Harbaugh left, it was just like everyone left, and then everyone got hurt and everyone got suspended. Of course, when you sign Jerome Simpson, what can you expect? That's kind of been his MO.
Exactly. All right, well, we got somewhat off track. The bottom line is, it's a very tough division, similar to the NFC West. It's a very tough division. And I think us and the Chiefs are both rooting that, you know, this is the year it falls apart for the Broncos. And, you know, there's something to that. I don't know that their front seven is as strong as it was last year when DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller were racking up sacks every week. I don't know that their cornerback situation is all that great. I don't know that they have a legitimate running back. And, you know, at some point, Peyton Manning's got to age, right?
You'd think so, but he might be a robot. I'm not sure.
Could be. That certainly looks like one.
Yeah. All right, so outcome for this weekend is, what do you want to see? I mean, score-wise, it's going to be Scrubs playing. I know, I use that in the most respectful way, because every single guy on the 90-man roster, they're all talented players. But in terms of fan day, it's going to be Scrubs versus Scrubs at the end of the game. What do you want to see?
What do I want to see? I want to see Kyle Emanuel get a lot of snaps. I made a prediction before the preseason started that he would lead the league in preseason sacks, which isn't saying much. I think Michael Sam led the league in preseason sacks last year.
True.
But I still, despite the fact that Kyle Emanuel is now awesome, I still fully believe that that's a possibility, and now I desperately want it to happen. I really want to see Ladarius Green get worked into the offense. I'd love to see Melvin Gordon get some snaps if he's healthy enough. I don't know if there's anything specifically I'm looking for, except just, you know, a defense that seems to understand what's going on. That's something that they've struggled with in the game against the Cowboys. It's something I've seen them struggle with a lot at practice. When the offense they're going up against has pre-snap motion, they move a wide receiver from one side to the other, or running back out wide or something, the defense just seems completely lost. I'm not sure why that is. This is the same defensive coordinator they've had for 5 or 6 years now. It's the same defense they've been running the whole time. It's mostly the same group of guys from last year. I don't know where the confusion is coming from, but I really want to see less of it. So I want to see the Cardinals use a lot of motion and the Chargers understanding what to do without leaving someone wide open down the field.
Well, this has been a as always, John, the past couple of years. Anytime the time we met up in Vegas with a whole bunch of the other football writers, and then last year's show and this year's show, it's always a treat. Listeners, John Gennaro is part of the top class of SB Nation. If you haven't visited BoltsFromTheBlue.com, that's a site you have to do. The San Diego Charger fan base is one that we can respect. They're not a bunch of thugs like other places we know, and they're not a bunch of bandwagoners like other places we know up north. And they're a pretty bearable group of area, and we love San Diego, guys, fans. We love going to San Diego, so we can support them. And I'll tell you this, John, I hope the next time we see each other and we get to talk to each other is in February.
Yeah, I don't really want to go to San Francisco, but I will go for that.
Clara, so it's not even San Francisco anymore.
That's true. It's a good hour away from San Francisco, which makes it significantly better. I will say, before this past year's Super Bowl, I have family that lives in Phoenix, but I always hated it. Part of the reason is the time of year that I tend to visit is not
the
time of year to visit Phoenix.
Hot as hell out
here. But going this past February for the Super Bowl, and really exploring the city of Phoenix and enjoying the cute little areas around downtown Phoenix and that big convention center, it was lovely. It really changed my mind about Phoenix as a city. So absolutely, unless we're playing against you guys, and like you said, I certainly hope that I get to root against the Cardinals in the Super Bowl. That would be awesome. But yeah, I got no issue with the Cardinals, the Cardinals fans. I think you guys are good. Like I said, my family that lives there are big Cardinal fans. So by all means, let's do this as much as we possibly can, because I love talking to you. Even before we started talking tonight, I went ahead and gave my girlfriend a rundown of our Tom Tupa conversation that started
one
this friendship
for the ages. Golly, I have no idea why I love Tom Tupa so much, but I did.
You know, at some point we're gonna have to get together in person. I'm gonna have to buy you about 50 beers, because that's how many beers you won me with that little bitty piece of trivia of Tom Tupa playing starting quarterback for the Cardinals.
Yes, that's why they got him. That's why they got him. Great. Well, Revenge of the Birds Radio listeners, this has been a wrap for this show. Another great conversation with John Gennaro. Thanks, John, for coming on, and we will talk again, hopefully, come February. If not, no doubt we will talk to each other next preseason, because we always play the Broncos and we always play the Chargers, right?
Yeah, can't wait for it, man.
All right. Thanks for having you on. I appreciate you coming on tonight, John. We'll have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.